Welcome to episode 105 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for Monday, August 18th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Hey, Fredcast fans, it's time for another Fredcast, and today we're wrapping up our Tour of Utah coverage, but stand by whether you're a racing fan or not. I think you're going to get a kick out of our interview with Noreen Godfrey and her rider, Carson Miller, from Team Land Rover Orbea. Just more insight into the world of professional cycling and a developmental cycling team. You're gonna like this one. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by listeners just like you. You know, there's listeners just like you who are sending in PayPal donations and just plain clicking on the advertising links at www.thefredcast.com, going to stores you would go to anyway, getting the same prices you would normally get, but supporting the Fredcast. Thanks so much for your donations and your support. It's greatly appreciated. Hey, Fredcast fans, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and we are wrapping up our Tour of Utah coverage. I think you're going to enjoy this, and then tomorrow I'll be recording a full episode of the Fredcast with news and a bunch of features. And for those of you who would like to be involved in that episode of the show, get me your voicemails to our voicemail line at 435-258-6373. Here's the question I'd like you to answer, and I would love it if you would please call in and leave however long or short of a message. The topic is really simple. It's saddle sores. Have you ever had them? If so, how did you get them, and how did you cure them? Or how do you prevent saddle sores from happening to you? I think there's a lot of Fredcast fans who would be very interested in hearing your insights into this. Please get me your voicemails by 6 p.m. Pacific time, Tuesday, August the 19th, so that I can put them into the show. I would love to get as much feedback as possible. That number again, 435-258-6373. That's 435-258-6FRED. Or call our Skype line if you have Skype. The handle is The Fredcast, and leave a voicemail. I would love to hear what you think and how you've cured your saddle sores. And of course, if you have the capability to record your message on your computer and send it to me as an MP3 or a WAV file, please feel free to do that too. I want to hear from as many people as possible. That would be great. Well, let's wrap up our Tour of Utah coverage. I just did an interview with Noreen Godfrey and one of her riders from Team Land Rover Orbea, Carson Miller, and we talked about yesterday's Stage 5 of the Tour of Utah. Stage 5 was an individual time trial, about 7.5 miles long, and it was won by Tom Zirbel from the Bissell Pro Cycling Team in 13 minutes and 50 seconds. Let me say that again. 7.5 miles, 13 minutes, 50 seconds. Second place went to Brent Bookwalter from Team BMC in 13:59.3. Third went to Jeff Lauder from the BMC Pro Cycling Team in 14 minutes and 5 seconds. Fifth, Tom Danielson from Garmin Chipotle, 14:11.6. And fifth, Ian McKissick from BMC in 14:12.3. Now, you will recall that Blake Caldwell was still in the yellow jersey after Stage 4, the epic queen stage of 15,000 feet of climbing in about 100 miles on Stage 4 on Saturday, which ended up at Snowbird. Blake Caldwell was ahead by just a few scant seconds. Well, Caldwell came in 14th place, 14 minutes, 21.8 seconds. As a result, the final general classification, Salt Lake City's own Jeff Lauder from Team BMC wins the 2008 Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. Second place by just a couple of seconds, Blake Caldwell from Garmin Chipotle. In third, Glenn Chadwick from Team Type 1. Fourth, Burke Swindlehurst from Bissell. Fifth, Brent Bookwalter from BMC. Sixth place, Toyota United's Chris Baldwin. Seventh place went to Rock Racing's Oscar Sevilla. Eighth place from Garmin Chipotle, Peter Stetna. And in ninth, Darren Lill from BMC. In 10th, Phil Zazicek from Team HealthNet, presented by Maxis. I did not have a chance to catch up with Noreen Godfrey from Team Land Rover Orbea yesterday after the race, but I did catch up with her and one of her riders this evening. I think you're going to be very interested in this extended interview with the two of them. Here's how the interview went. Hey, Noreen, how's it going today?
Pretty good.
Excellent.
We're back home in Oregon.
Yeah, I was going to say, just so everybody knows, it's Monday. Both Noreen and I were traveling yesterday. And you know what? Let's go back to that for a second. So Sunday was the individual time trial. And then how soon after the race ended were you guys on the road?
Oh, probably about 30 minutes, just enough for those guys to give themselves a baby wipe, get out and pack their stuff in, and we're out of there.
So the non-glamorous life of a development team, you baby wipe and you're on the road.
We're on the road, yes.
So now,
nice 12-hour drive.
Now, when I saw you guys, you had a car and a van. So all of you just pack up into those two vehicles and hit the road?
Yes, we did. A little cramped out.
So again, sorry, I talked over you there for a second. How long from Salt Lake City to Oregon?
Excuse me?
How long did it take you to get up to Oregon from Salt Lake?
12 hours.
Okay, so now if my kids and I were on the road, we'd be stopping at McDonald's and Burger King and places like that. Where do bike racers stop to eat along the road?
The gas stations, we grab a little bit of food, and we keep going when we fill up gas.
Wow. Now, when you got home, you probably went back to the day job today, right?
Yes, I did. I went to bed, got up, went back to work.
Wow. Now, what about the racers? What do the guys do on a day like today?
They slept in. Then they got up and went for a ride.
So I just want to sort of really get into the whole vibe of a development team here. Are these guys eating, sleeping, and breathing cycling, or do they have part-time jobs? How does it work for them?
The non-U.S. riders are eating and sleeping and focusing on cycling because they're not allowed to work in the U.S. So cycling is their job, just like a professional athlete.
Right.
They have to go and train somewhere in the neighborhood from 6 to 8 hours a day. Carson is a U.S. rider, and so he has a day job as well. So he is up on his bike at 6 a.m. training, then going to work, and then coming home and training again.
Wow. Okay, so now what is a typical training ride in the morning? You know what? I'm going to ask Carson because we're going to talk to him in a second. So first, let's go back and talk about yesterday's individual time trial. We knew when we got to Snowbird on Saturday that the individual time trial was going to decide the GC. And it did, didn't it?
It did by 1 second.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So now Jeff Lauder, hometown boy, makes good, right?
He did. Yes, he did. He beat, who was it, Blake Caldwell by 7 seconds, giving him the 1 second lead. Beat him by 8 seconds, giving him the 1 second lead.
Wow. And now Tom Zirbel won the time trial yesterday, right?
Yes, he did.
And how much time was that?
How much time? Let me look and see. Carson was playing with my computer here. He did it in 13 minutes and 50 seconds.
And how long was the course yesterday?
7 miles.
Okay, that's a pretty blistering pace. What were the conditions like yesterday?
It was dry and hot. It wasn't that windy, so it was really nice. But the course was really twisty, so there was a lot of braking out there.
And it was twisty because it was on the motorsports course, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
And how did your guys do?
Our guys did really well. Carson put in, he got 55th. He was only 1 minute and 29 seconds down from Zirbel, which is really good when you think about this kid just started racing with the professional riders 2 months ago. Dave, the rider that we were watching for a while and he crashed, he had a little bit of a rough time yesterday. He came in 81st place because he couldn't put his elbow on the handlebar.
Oh, no.
We weren't sure if his elbow was cracked or not from the crash, and so he's waiting to go back to Canada to get x-rayed, but he wanted to finish this race, so he troopered on.
Oh, good for him. That's great.
It was a good day.
Well, now Carson's sitting there. Let me talk to Carson. Let's hear what his impressions of the race were.
All right, here's Carson.
Okay.
Hello?
Hey, Carson, how's it going today?
Good. How are you, Dave?
Excellent. Thank you. So, you know, I want to talk about tomorrow, but before we do, let's just talk about the whole experience of the Tour of Utah. You're relatively new to this level of racing, right?
I am. Just a couple months ago was when I finally earned my, it was less than a year, earned my Cat 1 upgrade, which made me eligible to race these NRC events at the highest level.
So how was it racing in an event like this, going up against, I mean, wow, Freddie Rodriguez, Tyler Hamilton, Will Frischkorn. How was that?
You know, it's definitely awe-inspiring, and it gives you motivation and hope for the future, at least for me, all at once. I've had the privilege over the past 5 or so years of hosting the HealthNet Professional Cycling Team at my house for the Cascade Cycling Classic. And so I've been able to meet a lot of the riders like Jeff Lauder and Rory Sutherland over the years. And now to be in the same race as the guys racing against them, it's really exciting. And it's another step up. And, you know, now racing with guys like Will Frischkorn and Tyler Hamilton coming off of the tour, it's another step up. And it's a good sign for me that I'm moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're out there and you're on the bike, do you have a little bit of that sort of starstruck mentality, or is it more of just greater respect and confidence in yourself that you're actually racing with guys like this?
You know, I think I kind of laugh to myself more than anything else. Maybe a bit of the starstruck feeling at the very beginning, but I know that I've been training at 100%, and my coach and I, we know exactly where I need to be for these events. And the preparation for the events has been terrific. And so I know that I have every reason to be there, that those guys do. And I'm, you know, 100% confident in my abilities to race and be competitive with those guys.
Awesome. I love that attitude. So you talked about your coach and you talked about the preparation. Just briefly, how do you, especially knowing now that you've got a day job, how do you prepare for an event like this? I mean, Noreen was saying that you get up in the morning and you ride, you go to work, you come home in the evening and you ride. Take us through that. What does the training look like? What do your daily rides look like?
Yeah, you know, it's my daily life is pretty limited to going to work and training, and in between those two, I try and eat and rest and recover for the next day. So that's kind of the overview of my day. Usually, I'll be up between 5 and 6 in the morning, and then I'm straight into work for between 8 and 9 hours a day, and then I'll come home and ride till dark in the evenings, which is, you know, anywhere between 3 and 5 hours during the week on a weekday, and then, you know, 5 to 8 hours on the weekend. And as far as the preparation goes, you know, they come out with the course profiles and the course maps early enough that my coach and I, we look at those and we'd like to go over, you know, what the climbs are going to be like, and we'll do a lot of intervals and strategic preparation to prepare as best we can for the specific events and challenges that'll face us in each race.
Now, what about a race like the Tour of Utah, where there's a lot of high altitude stuff? How do you deal with that?
The ideal preparation, I've had the experience, I guess, was able to learn when the U.S. National Championships were held in Park City several years ago. The first year, I just went straight from my home in Bend, Oregon, and that's at about 3,500 feet to renting a apartment in Park City at 7,000 feet. The oxygen was, or the lack thereof, really, definitely got to me that first year racing. I knew next time around that I would need to be better prepared for the high altitude, especially when you're climbing up over 8,000 feet. And so the following year, I started off, my house is in, I live in Bend, Oregon, and then that's right at the base of the Cascade Mountains. So for a week or two, I think it was probably closer to a week and a half, I'd drive up to the mountains. The highest point on the road was about 5,500 feet, and I would sleep there every night just to begin getting used to that high altitude. And then we made sure to arrive into Utah about a week early for the national championships. And that just gave me the final adjustment to the 7,000 feet and then also the roads that I'd be racing on.
So, I mean, when you're racing at this level, I mean, your life literally is eat, sleep, work, ride, and that's it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's funny. My teammates do have a bit of a luxury in that their visas don't allow them to work, and so they have the privilege you know, when they're living in Portland, Oregon, they're able to go out on the evenings that don't have a big race following them, and they can, you know, go out for a dessert or a walk on the town, and they come to Bend and they ask me what I do at night, and I just tell them I sleep. I couldn't tell you much about the nightlife in Bend.
Of course, absolutely. So what does the next year look like for you?
The next year, we're still just getting ready to plan out the next year, but it's I'm really going to make a big push again for the road cycling season, maybe tabling my cyclocross just a bit in order to start be more fully prepared for the beginning of the road season. In years past, I've done a full road season as well as a full cyclocross season right up through the end of January, which just doing the full cyclocross season puts me a little bit behind the eight ball for starting a road season in March. And so we'll probably step down the cross bike a bit earlier this year to get ready for the coming road season.
You've probably heard this before, but listening to you makes me tired.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple times. And, you know, I'm really lucky in that I absolutely love riding my bike and racing my bike. And I think that really helps to every day is a great day when you're on the bike, and it's a great stress reliever for me. And I love, you know, people ask, well, what's your favorite discipline, road or cyclocross? And I tell them it depends on what time of the year it is.
Wow. That's, you know what? That's fantastic. Now let's talk about yesterday. So yesterday's the individual time trial. You had just come off an epic stage with 15,000 feet of climbing. How do you go from a really, really hard, grueling day like that? How do you mentally prepare yourself for this sprint of the individual time trial?
You know, it's good that they are completely different events. I think going from, you know, what truly was an epic day on the bike, you know, just over 4.5 hours. And like you said, we covered 160 kilometers and 16,000 feet of climbing. As far as preparing for the individual time trial, I was there with a good amount of time and was able to get in a very good warm-up. And I'm very much in a creature of habit, and so once I start on a time trial warm-up and a time trial routine, everything's pretty much set, and I go almost into autopilot as far as straight away I know what the effort's going to feel like. I was able to get out and pre-ride the technical parts of the course, which was very very helpful later in the stage when, you know, you're coming through corners at 40 to 55K an hour. It's nice to know exactly how that corner is going to feel on a time trial bike.
Now, the course that you were on was a motorsports course, and lest anybody think I'm talking about your traditional NASCAR oval, this was anything but, right?
It was anything but a typical oval that NASCAR would race on. There was, I couldn't tell you how many corners there were, but there was a lot of them and several very technical chicanes that we were negotiating over the course of 12 kilometers. I know Tom Zirbel actually mentioned on, I think I saw in one of his interviews, he wasn't able to see all of the course and all of the corners, and he nearly overshot one corner and was straight into the tire barriers that lined the motorsports park.
Wow, pretty amazing for the guy who actually won the race. So he was heading flat out on that course.
Yeah, he must have been flat out. He had a very impressive time over the course. You know, there was some good long straightaway drag sections, and the wind, at least when I was out on the course, the wind was just, you know, a light headwind. And so the power and the way that Tom Zirbel rode the race was very impressive, but it shows he's on good form in his preparation for the National Time Trial Championships as well.
So now you were about a minute 29 down on Zirbel, about a minute 14 down on the overall GC leader, at least in the stage of 114. How did you feel when you went out and did the race?
You know, it's a time trial, and I always feel almost terrible after time trials. I was careful not to eat too much beforehand because I knew if I ate more, you know, very much at all, that I would probably see it again, and that wasn't what I wanted. But I was confident in the effort. I knew that I had to go out and I had to give 100%. I wouldn't be out there just riding a bike to get through the stage, even if it was the last one.
Yeah.
And I was there ready to race and give 100%, and you know, to cross the line and be absolutely spent, and I didn't have anything left, and I know I left everything on the roads in Utah, so that was a good feeling.
Nice. Now, do you use a power meter or heart rate monitor when you're out on your bike?
I do. one of the conditions that my coach set for me when I first started working with him, he said, you know, when I was just talking to him, he was a good friend I'd met through actually hosting HealthNet, and he told me from the very beginning that he wouldn't coach anybody without a power meter. So I knew straight away that I'd be investing heavily in a power meter, and just this year I upgraded from my Power Captain SRM, which has been a great training tool for myself as well as my coach.
Okay, so now you're going down an avenue that I wasn't planning on, but since you're there, I'm gonna follow you. Just curious, from a professional cyclist standpoint, why the SRM over the PowerTap? What makes that such a better training tool for you? Because I get asked that question all the time. So to hear it from somebody like you will mean a lot.
Yeah, the PowerTaps have come a long way since I think they first came out, and they are great tools. I think for me, the limiting, what limits the PowerTap and makes it maybe a little not so great as the SRM is the fact that you'd have to buy one hub for every set of wheels that you were going to train and race with. Whereas the SRM, I can put it, you know, it doesn't matter what wheels or pedals I put on the bike. It's interchangeable, and that's a very nice feature. And then once you get comfortable with the German software, it's a bit cumbersome to set up, but eventually I do like all the different graphs and the tables that I can look at on the computer with the SRM power file.
Yeah, it makes sense. So where I was going with the question about the power meter was, if you don't mind sharing, because I think for the recreational cyclists who are listening, they might find it interesting. What kind of an average power do you see on a time trial like yesterday?
You know, a time trial like yesterday, I know that my threshold is right around 345 watts. So you figure that's a number I can maintain for at least 20 minutes. Going through a very quick and challenging time trial like yesterday with the winds the way they were, you know, I think I was seeing somewhere around an average of 360 to 370 watts. And that's for me personally on the bike that I had, you know, in my setup, and then also being maybe a bit on the lighter side compared to some of the stronger time trial riders.
Right.
So it'll take a few less walks to move me forward than a guy like Tom Zerbel or Magnus Backstead. But, you know, at the same time, it's a challenge to put out 360 watts for 15 minutes.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. So for those of you recreational cyclists listening, there's something for you to shoot for. Well, Carson, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking the time and sort of allowing us into your life for the last week. And just wish you a lot of luck and hope that we can check in with you a little bit next year and see how the season's going.
Thanks. I do appreciate it. It's been a great week, and I'm looking forward to many more great races.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great evening. Let's talk to Noreen one more time.
No problem.
Thanks.
Hey, Dave.
You've got some great kids on your team. Have I told you that?
Awesome. Yes, I know they're all good kids.
So let me ask you a couple more questions, then we'll go, because I know it's getting late. But
okay.
Let's talk a little bit about, from your perspective, as a team manager, if you will, what does it mean for your life? What are you sacrificing to manage this team and to put it together year after year?
Pretty much like Carson, I eat, I sleep, I work, and it's all about bike after that. I mean, David and I, we always have meetings of what we're doing. Instead of going out on a date to the movies, David and I are going over what's the next race, where we need to go, and do all stuff like that. So that's
just like Carson. I mean, this is your life.
It is. It is our life. Cycling is our life, and it's what we do to help these kids develop.
And what as my dog barks in the background, what motivated you and Dave to get involved at this sort of a level and to really sacrifice your lives to develop these young riders?
Well, the first thing is the Lance Armstrong Foundation and what we do with the foundation. That's so important to give back. And the second thing, why Dave and I sacrifice so much, is we've raced at their level, mm-hmm. but we didn't get the help and support that is needed to make it to the next step. And so we know what it's like to race at that level and being unsupported. And so David and I want to help these guys with support, knowing that we've been there, we know what's required, and we want to make it a little bit easier for them.
So I was going to ask you if this is something that you would suggest that others do, but instead, let me turn it around and say, how can those who are listening, who have the same desire to help people really develop themselves through the sport, how can they support Land Rover Orbea? How can they support young riders as they're coming up, whether they're on your team or on another team?
I think one of the best things to do is to support these young riders is, one, to encourage them. That's so important. Finding a good program, a junior program, getting involved, going to the races, you know, and cheering them on is so important to encourage them and let them know that they can do it. And then when they're ready to go to the next level, maybe find a good club out there that is racing, that has some Category 2 riders, Category 1 riders out there, and get those kids networked in. Get them learning how to race as a team. But just keep encouraging them and help them find the way. That's the best way.
And what would you say to the young rider who's listening right now, a Cat 3, a Cat 4, who is finding their way onto podiums, who is finding that they are improving month after month, year after year, and they want to find their place as a professional cyclist? What advice would you give them?
I guess the best advice that I can give anybody is you can be talented, really, really talented, but you also have to have discipline, which means, you know, you need to go out there and you need to train. You need to have both talent and discipline, and just go to sleep at night. Don't go out and party. Go to sleep at night, get your sleep, and just really, really focus on what your goal is and you know, do the right things, make the right choices.
And if there are those who want to contact you, maybe get some advice or just learn more about the team, where can they do that?
T Rubicon. I know it's not Land Rover or BEV. It's our old name. It's T-R-U-B-I-C-O-N at Comcast.net.
Excellent. All right, Noreen.
That's our email.
As I said to Carson, I really want to thank you for the opportunity to allow me, and especially to allow the listeners, a little peek into the lives of a development team, a team of up-and-coming racers at a pretty major event. It has been a pleasure talking to you every day. It's been a pleasure spending time with you. And as I said to Carson, I hope that over the next few months and years, we'll have even more opportunities to do things like this with you and with your team so that we can keep showing people that it's not just about, as you said in your email to me today, the guys with the buses and the Escalades and the trucks, that it's also about the people with the old beat up van and the Easy Up tent.
Yep. The bad news bears.
And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, go to www.thefredcast.com. I put up a really quick video of the Criterium from the other day, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Noreen, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for this week.
Thank you, Dave. You're awesome.
All right. Take care.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Once again, I do want to thank Noreen Godfrey and the entire Land Rover Orbea team. It has been a great week spending time with them. I've really, really enjoyed it. And once again, if you would like to learn more about the team, it's TRUBICON.org, TRUBICON.org, because Land Rover Orbea used to be Team Rubicon. Now, obviously, having those two great sponsors on board, I'm sure that they'll have a new URL soon. But still, for right now, TRUBICON.org. And thanks once again to all of them for allowing me in and allowing all of you in this week for the coverage of the 2008 Tour of Utah. Well, once again, I will be back again tomorrow night with a regular episode of the Fredcast. Looking forward to bringing that to you. Please send me your saddle sore stories. You can either send those in an email, preferably an audio comment in your email. That's thefredcast@gmail.com. Or please use our listener hotline at area code 435-258-6373 or our Skype line. The Skype handle is thefredcast. So, looking forward to talking to you again tomorrow night with a full episode of the Fredcast. And after that, it's all about the Alps, baby. Until then, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.